This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Patty Goldman, Vice President for Litigation at Earth Justice, a nonprofit public interest law firm dedicated to protecting the magnificent places, natural resources, and wildlife of this earth, and to defending the right of all people to a healthy environment. Patty leads the organization's 10 regional offices in developing and implementing effective legal strategies to protect the environment for future generations. In 2007, she was given the Woman of the Year Award by Seattle University Women's Law Caucus and has been named a super lawyer by Washington Law and Politics since 2006. Patty Goldman is here today to evaluate the environmental record of the Obama administration. Welcome, Patty.
I'm glad to be here.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Earth Justice?
Sure. Earth Justice is a nonprofit organization. We represent groups, citizens, fishing organizations when they need to go to court to enforce environmental laws. We also catalyze effective environmental policies by enforcing our laws to their maximum effect.
Looking overall, how would you characterize the Obama administration's record on the environment?
It's a mixed record. I would say the high points are with Lisa Jackson and the Environmental Protection Agency's enforcement of the Clean Air Act. I would say the low points have been some of the policies coming out of Interior on the protections or lack of protections now for the gray wolf and also drilling in the Arctic. I think those have been the low points. But I think overall what we've seen from the president himself is that this is not his top issue. And so we haven't seen the leadership that we really needed last Congress on climate and that we would like to still see going forward.
Would you like to expand on the most positive steps forward on the environmental issues during the Obama administration?
Well, I think to get there, I first have to say that I think one of the big failures was the president did not take a leadership role in getting climate legislation in the last Congress. And so that left us with a lost opportunity and one that we really have no idea when we will have it again. Now, granted, he did have a couple of wars and a financial crisis and healthcare and other priorities, but this was the moment to really take that lead. What we've seen, though, at EPA now is that EPA is stepping in. It's kind of what we call Plan B. It's enforcing the Clean Air Act, which, as the Supreme Court said in 2007, does reach climate pollution. And we've now seen the EPA find that climate pollution, carbon dioxide in particular, endangers public health, put in place restrictions on greenhouse gases in cars, lead to the regulation of any new large polluting sources like coal plants and industrial facilities. So they now need limits on greenhouse gases. And we have schedules now to get other kinds of Clean Air Act restrictions on existing facilities, both coal plants and refineries. So we are underway now to enforce the Clean Air Act to get at climate pollution. And so that's a real positive step forward. The other climate step forward is in the Department of Energy. Secretary Chu has taken a leadership role. We now are seeing energy efficiency standards for all sorts of appliances. There were laws in place to require those kinds of standards. They were not being enforced previously, but now we are seeing those come out, and they are good standards that are forcing much greater energy efficiency requirements, and that's going to obviate the need for a lot of new coal plants.
You've alluded a bit to this already, but would you expand on the most significant opportunities lost and/or environmental protections rolled back during the Obama administration?
Well, the biggest one, as I said, was climate legislation. That is by far the biggest opportunity lost. I would say the second big opportunity that it was lost, it's hard to call it an opportunity, but, you know, flash backward 1 year, we were in the midst of a terrible oil spill disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. And that awakened the country's awareness to what was going on there, which was basic lawlessness. You had the oil industry running rampant over the regulators. It was worse than cozy, and there were really no steps being taken to comply with our environmental laws. We had loopholes in the Gulf of Mexico for virtually all of our environmental laws. And so that provided the opportunity, if you will, to tighten up those laws. Congress also had the opportunity to pass an overhaul of how we regulate oil drilling and, of course, did not do that. It passed the House but not the Senate. Again, maybe we could have had the leadership come from the White House to get that to the finish line. But the agencies have a lot of authority to adopt regulations to tighten up the standards. They've done a bit. They've done a bit on some of the safety rules. They've tightened up some of the loopholes, but we're still seeing a rush to drill in very, very dangerous places. Deep water, a mile or so under the Gulf, up in Alaska, up in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas, where, you know, if an oil spill happened there, we don't know what we do. We don't know how to clean up an oil spill in sea ice. There is no infrastructure like there is in the Gulf, and yet we're seeing that rush to drill. So I would say those are significant lost opportunities.
What have been the main challenges for implementation of environmental protections during the Obama administration?
Well, if you think about when this administration started, you have a little context for where we were. We had 8 years of the worst environmental president ever, an anti-environmental president, where a lot of the political appointees had come from the industry and felt that they were still doing the industry's work when they were in their agencies. So we had all the midnight regulations. We had just rollbacks of all sorts of laws and implementing mechanisms. So that's what the Obama administration inherited. So there was a whole backlog on environmental protection. It took a long time to get the new appointees in place and to get their attention. So those were a lot of the challenges. We have quite an emboldened industry now, so that every time the Obama administration does undo one of those Bush rollbacks or takes some step to enforce the environmental laws, there's quite a backlash. There are a lot of lawsuits from industry trade groups. Now with the House in Republican hands and the Tea Party kind of mentality, there's a lot of oversight hearings. Basically, every time you have an environmental official even saying they're going to do something to protect the environment. So that's the kind of climate that the agencies are in now.
Would you now like to say more about what's been done in regard to climate change? You've said a fair amount about that, but where do we really stand in terms of the Obama administration's efforts on climate change?
Well, I think, you know, I've already applauded what's happened in using the Clean Air Act and also in the Department of Energy. We still have subsidies that are given out by the federal government for coal-fired power, both in this country and abroad. We have coal mining that is happening both in Appalachia in the mountaintop removal mining and in the Powder River Basin, where that's viewed to be a natural resource that should be exploited for the economy, not really paying attention to what's going to happen when that coal is burned. We have exports of coal to other countries, and we have government programs to promote those exports. So we have an administration with policy perspective on climate change that is not affecting the policies that are happening in a lot of the agencies. We don't have the alignment that, from my perspective, you would like to see, so that what's happening at EPA is not being undone by what's happening at, say, the Bureau of Land Management with the Powder River Basin coal mining.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Patty Goldman, Vice President for Litigation at Earth Justice. Our topic is the environmental record of the Obama administration. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you evaluate the progress made in protecting endangered species by the Obama administration?
Sure. You know, this is another one where it's important to remember where we were in January 2009. One of the most notorious Bush administration officials is Julie McDonald, who was the top official in the Department of Interior who oversaw fish and wildlife and endangered species. She had a couple of different titles in her tenure, but she was the mover and shaker there. And she was particularly hostile to protecting endangered species. In fact, two inspector generals' reports found so, and she eventually resigned her position because of sharing inside information with some of the regulated industries. But she played quite a heavy-handed role in trumping the science. So one example that comes close to home is with the marbled murrelet, which is a seabird that nests in the branches of old-growth trees. It is on the endangered species list, was put there in the 1990s, and there was an industry attempt to get that protection undone because that might mean more logging of the old-growth forests in the Northwest. So she got heavily involved in that. And the document that was being prepared was an analysis of the status of the species, a status review. There was a line in the end of it that said, "Do the marbled murrelets in the lower 48 states require the protection of the Endangered Species Act as a separate population? Yes or no?" It said yes. She changed it to no the night before it was released to the public and then changed the press release. Of course, we didn't learn that before the fact. We learned that after the fact when we were challenging that decision and obtained those discoveries under the Freedom of Information Act. But that was the kind of disregard that we were seeing for science. And it was really quite disappointing. And so one of the first things that happened when Secretary Salazar came in is the government had to do a very embarrassing thing. They had to go to all of these courts that had these challenges to endangered species protections in front of them and say, well, actually, we need to stop and rethink this because Julie McDonald had meddled with the science, according to this Inspector General report, and we need to look at that. And they shifted their position in a lot of those cases. They asked the courts to send a lot of these decisions back to the agencies. So I would say on that front, we have seen a return to the science on a lot of endangered species protections. We also had a midnight regulation that would have gotten rid of the checks and balances in the Endangered Species Act and shut out the wildlife agencies. And this was what we called self-consultation because it allowed any agency just to sign off on actions by itself. That was rescinded. It was one of the first things that Gary Locke did when he became the Secretary of Commerce, along with Secretary Salazar. So I think we're back to a place of seeing the Endangered Species Act implemented more in lines with the way it should be, with science being the driver, except when it comes to a couple of things. And I would say that is wolves. And that is salmon when we think of the Columbia Snake Hydropower System. And I think the wolf delisting decision is one of the low points for this administration. We had two wolf delisting decisions in the Bush years. We challenged the first one in court. It was thrown out. We had a second one that had been signed but not published by the time the inauguration came. So it was not a final rule. And as all presidents do when they come in, they suspend everything that's in the pipeline that isn't a done deal so they can rethink it before it is locked in. President Obama did that. But then when it came time to decide what to do with the wolf delisting, they sent the Bush wolf delisting rule through in the same form in which it came to them. And that was quite a disappointment. And not only did they defend that through the courts when we won that case, throwing out that delisting because it had artificially divided up the population, basically decided wolves in one state were going to be listed, but not in another, which is a little ridiculous when you think about what the wolves are going to do when they come to the state line. But what was really disappointing is then when it became a hot political issue and we had proposals to delist wolves legislatively floating around in Congress, Secretary Salazar supported that. And that was really disappointing. We have never had Congress step in and legislatively delist a species before. Instead, it is a statute that is meant to have science drive what species need to survive. And it really embodies this higher value on biodiversity and the creatures that we share this world with. So that was incredibly disappointing. So the other one I mentioned was the Columbia Snake Hydropower System, another long-term battle in this region where, you know, we have the best hope for salmon survival if the salmon could get up to that great wilderness area in Idaho, and we could have robust salmon populations to carry us into the future. And that's particularly important with climate change, where that is going to be the best habitat. We've been fighting for two decades now on the Snake River dams, the lower dams, which really supply very little power, but have led to the plummeting of salmon populations. Well, the Obama administration has pretty much stayed the course. They have stood by the same plan for that system, which is tweaks and really minor mitigation at the margin rather than really dealing with the root cause of the problem. That's all in court. Judge Redden should be issuing a decision literally any day on round whatever. It's probably four or five now of that longstanding litigation.
How well are public lands being protected under the Obama administration?
We should look at which public lands, but I think on the national forests, we've seen some turnaround of where we were in the Bush years. And I think the best examples for this region, the roadless protection for roadless areas on our national forests and the Northwest Forest Plan, the old growth forests of the Northwest. For the roadless protections, one of the last acts of the Clinton administration was to adopt a regulation protecting roadless areas on our national forests, 58.5 million acres in all. And this is really critical because without that kind of protection, you have these lands addressed project by project, timber sale by timber sale, road by road. And at that point, there are interests in going forward with a particular action, but not seeing the value of these undeveloped areas as a whole. So that was a really important advance. It happened late in the administration, so it was stalled and then whittled away and then replaced with a state-by-state rule in the Bush years. And all of that was litigated. We were defending that rule, often alone, often next to an empty chair, since the Bush administration did not want to defend it. In the very beginning, I would say the Obama administration was slow to come to protect roadless areas, even though Senator Obama had said that he wanted national roadless protection, and so had Governor Vilsack before he was Secretary of Agriculture, which oversees the Forest Service. But when we won a challenge to the Bush repeal in August of 2009, and then the decision was squarely in their court, so to speak, to decide whether to appeal, Secretary Vilsack embraced roadless protection. They are now fully defending it in the one case that is still remaining, which is a challenge by Wyoming to the rule, and have said that if it is thrown out, they will put that kind of protection back in place. So they are fully there now. So that's a great piece of news. They also are working to craft rules that will integrate climate change into the management of the national forests. So that is also a long overdue step. On the Northwest Forests, again, you have to go back to look at where we are now. You had the first ecosystem protection plan in the whole nation here in the Northwest to protect old growth ecosystems and the wildlife that depend on them. And then you had a systematic dismantling of those protections in the Bush years. And a lot of that was in play when we had the change in administrations. So you had, I mentioned the Marble Murrelet already, you had the recovery plan for the Northern Spotted Owl, which also was pulled back because of meddling by Julie McDonald. And then you had the ultimate dismantling of the plan, which was an amendment that got rid of the old growth reserves, got rid of the watershed protections for salmon on all of the Western Oregon lands, which are Bureau of Land Management lands. And that was going to unravel the whole plan since all of the pieces fit together. And those low elevation lands were critically important for salmon and for the various wildlife species. So we had challenged that plan, and it was pretty clear it had been rushed through. I think it was signed on New Year's Eve, 2008. And so, you know, the ink was barely dry when we had the inauguration day. We had challenged it. The Obama administration essentially confessed error and said they had not followed, the Forest Service, the various agencies under Bush had not followed the various environmental laws. And so they withdrew the plan. But then the timber industry challenged that repeal for not going through proper procedures. And the plan was just put back in place this spring. We're now back in court. And the Obama administration has said they do not want to defend that plan, that, again, the environmental laws were not complied with. They want to go back and do their own plan. They want to make sure what they're doing is addressing the needs of the various endangered and threatened species. And so we're in a good place. You know, we'll see what happens when they start developing their new plan. Then I think it starts being a little less pure. There are a lot more compromises along the way. But I think that we're seeing that the days of yore are gone. We're not talking about a wholesale dismantling of the kind of system that was put in place. And it's so important what was put in place because it was dealing with our national forests and these wide landscapes as an ecosystem, which is going to be the best way to have these areas for the future and to support the wildlife and the clean water and the salmon that all depend on them.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Patty Goldman, Vice President for Litigation at Earth Justice. Our topic is the environmental record of the Obama administration. How well are clean air issues being addressed under the Obama administration?
Well, I think this is really the bright light of this administration. Again, you had under the Bush administration, the official in charge of air had been a former lobbyist that represented coal and energy companies trying to weaken air protection. So I guess you'd have to say we were moving backwards in those years. You had a lot of inaction, which of course is terrible when you're trying to deal with air pollution. And then you had a lot of loopholes and exemptions and different kinds of rules that were meant not to clean up air pollution. But under Lisa Jackson, we've really made a shift. And let me give one example of where we were. and that is with coal plants and the toxic air pollution that comes from those plants, mercury in particular. Mercury from coal-fired power plants is the number one cause of our fish advisories throughout the whole country, where you've got lakes and rivers in every state that have fish advisories that warn that we shouldn't eat the fish because of mercury contamination. So in the end of the Clinton administration, we had a new rule that would have limited that air pollution. That was undone under the Bush administration and basically saying we could trade the mercury pollution, even though it's really quite local in its effects, particularly on water bodies. It went to the D.C. Circuit, and it's one of my favorite quotes from a decision. What the panel said was that the new rule, the Bush rule, deploys the logic of the Queen of Hearts, substituting desires for the plain language of the law. And there you have it. So that decision came down, and there were petitions to the Supreme Court to review that case. And that was the status when Lisa Jackson was confirmed. She was confirmed in late January of 2009. In the first week of February, she withdrew the government's petition to the Supreme Court and said instead of having the court hear that case and the government spend its time, they wanted to work on a new rule that would comply with the law. The court did not take the case. We now have that proposed rule, and it is slated to be final by the end of the first term of the Obama administration. And it would cut 17,000 deaths every year. And that's just one of the markers. There are all sorts of other health effects that would be lessened, and of course, the water pollution effects. And that is emblematic of a lot of the progress that we've seen. We have new air toxic standards for cement kilns. Those will save 5,000 lives a year. We have new standards for medical waste incinerators, new rules that are in the pipeline for all sorts of other polluting facilities. When it comes to conventional air pollution that produces smog and soot, we've had a tightening up of the rules on soot. There is now a proposal at the White House on ozone, which is the source of smog, which would finally comply with the scientific advisor's recommendations. You know, and we're talking about some of the worst causes of various health effects for Americans from air pollution. So we're finally making progress there. And I really think that Lisa Jackson and how she's dealt with air pollution is one of the bright lights of this administration.
How effectively is clean water being promoted under the Obama administration?
Well, again, we're seeing some steps forward there. I would point to three. One is the Obama administration has recently proposed new guidance on what are waters that are covered by the Clean Water Act. This has been a point of controversy for well over a decade, and it really goes to intermittent streams and wetlands, a lot of those areas that are critically important for the health of our watersheds and for aquatic life and for us in terms of filtering out pollution. But we've had a lot of conflicting court interpretations, and we've had a lot of direction to the regulators to deem many kinds of waters not waters subject to the Clean Water Act. So we have a pretty good proposed interpretation that is now in the pipeline. We've also seen the Obama administration try to take steps to deal with water pollution more effectively. Some of the most intractable pollution comes from runoff, from agriculture, from urban development, and we've seen this administration start to propose new steps on stormwater, following the lead actually of Washington State, saying that low-impact development is really the way to lessen urban runoff and stormwater pollution. We've seen them in Florida adopt numeric caps on pollution from agriculture. This was in response to a lawsuit that we brought that was challenging the delay in putting hard numeric limits on this kind of pollution. We've had all sorts of hortatory language over the years that just hasn't done the trick. In Florida, we're having these outbreaks of toxic algae that are very risky for human health. And finally, we've got now some caps in place that I think are going to be the way to go for the future. And in the final area I would mention is with mountaintop removal mining in Appalachia, where the tops are blown off of the mountains to get at the coal seams. The rubble is dumped in the streams and basically bury the streams and destroy them. And this is a practice that if the government was enforcing the Clean Water Act, you wouldn't do that to your streams. You would not bury them in rubble and destroy them. But we hadn't seen enforcement of those standards. When the Obama administration took over, we had a case that had stopped a lot of the permitting in West Virginia for violations of the Clean Water Act. We had then lost on appeal, and that case was kind of winding its way still through the courts. The Obama administration then came in and addressed some of those issues with some guidance and some steps to start enforcing the Clean Water Act for that practice, saying that the agencies had to look at what would happen to the functionings of watersheds if they kept burying streams in rubble, and also look at the water pollution that would come from that rubble downstream. And as a result of those new policies, we've seen the very first veto of one of these mines, the Spruce Mine in West Virginia. And so that's going to be, I think, a slower battle. But I think that's another one where we've seen the administration step up.
You've spoken about this earlier in the interview, but would you talk about the progress the Obama administration has made in environmental protection that's particularly significant for the Pacific Northwest?
Well, I think the Northwest Forest Plan that protects the old-growth forests is a good example, and we're really leaders in the country on dealing with our forests as whole ecosystems and across boundaries. And so we're seeing the administration support that kind of ecosystem protection. We're seeing the administration force the coal-fired power industry to bear the costs of that cheap kind of production that has circumvented environmental laws for decades. And that's going to be important for this region since we have no new coal plants and the TransAlta coal plant is going to be shut down by 2025. And that's going to be important to make sure that we in this state are going to be competitive when we go to alternative sources of energy. So that's important. And I think the other climate initiatives are also going to benefit this state. It would have been better if we had comprehensive climate legislation instead of doing it piecemeal. I also think that returning the Endangered Species Act more to the science as the determinant of what should be done is going to be important. We have the orca whales and salmon and northern spotted owl, marbled murrelet, you know, or a whole range of species that are imperiled that, you know, we, I think, value those species and the ecosystems on which they depend. So I think that will bode well for the Northwest.
Where is Earth Justice planning to focus its efforts over the next year or two?
Well, we are focusing our efforts on a clean energy future, both looking at the bad ways to deal with sources of energy like coal-fired power and the alternatives like efficiency, renewables. We are focused on protecting our natural heritage, like our old-growth forests and salmon. And we're also have a growing focus on public health, air pollution, but also pesticides and toxics in the products that we all encounter in our daily lives.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think there are a lot of ups and downs and back and forth, and some of them will change with administrations or a congressional election. But I think if we stay true to enforcing the environmental laws, we will be making progress to protect the world that we share with those around us and which we all depend.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Patty.
My pleasure.
You have just been listening to Patty Goldman, Vice President for Litigation at Earth Justice. For more information, check on the web at www.earthjustice.org. Again, that's earthjustice.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.